Welcome to Caching in the Northwest, the only podcast dedicated to geocaching in the Great Pacific Northwest. We'll talk about caches, well, and caches unique to this little corner of the country tonight. So, while you're molding your mashed potatoes into national monuments, we'll be caching in the Northwest.
And we can't do that until we bring in our meandering mandrill. Some say he's caused a restaurant to close because of one bad Yelp review. And others say he's in talks with the Canadian government to get him to the International Space Station. All we know is he's called Land Monkey.
Well, you know, we figured there needs to be an actual real geocache in the International Space Station. We're working on getting an ammo can up there. You know, putting a trackable in a locker. Come on.
Anybody can do that.
Jeez, you guys. Step it up. It's time to go caching Land Monkey style. Hashtag geocache road trip. Big time.
Hashtag roads? Geocache space.
Where you're going, flight. There aren't any roads.
Rock and roll. All right. Hey, you know what? Thank you for another fun and friendly introduction there. And we also want to thank our faithful Denali level supporters. That would be Team Squirrel, worldcaching.com, and of course, all the other Patreon supporters. We appreciate the support from every single one of you. And folks, if you want to know more about supporting the show, I was going to say podcast, and then I switched to show. I'm just kind of rolling here. So it was a pishow.
Pishow.
Anyway, it's a really big shoe.
It's a really big pishow. If you want to know more about supporting the really big pishow, click the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. And folks who have clicked the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website and do support the show on a weekly basis, and we appreciate you so much. Those folks include Subway Mark, Cachemaniacs, Dora, More Dune Buddy, Kid Vegas 19, Geonat Pros, Win Off Seattle, and Acker, Doc OBX, Geek, Camp Clan, B Pendragon, and Billy Robson. And I don't know where to go with this, so happy Thanksgiving to him.
Very good. We are thankful. Thankful for all of our patrons, and we want to wish a happy Thanksgiving to all our U.S. listeners, and a belated Thanksgiving to our Canadian listeners, because they were ahead of us celebrating a little while back. Now, for tonight's show on Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving, we're going to talk about getting around the Northwest for visitors. Maybe you're here, you came over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house. Who knows? Maybe you just traveled via some planes, trains, and automobiles. Either way, there are things that you're going to want to see while you're here.
There are. So let's talk about some of those. But before we get into that, we want to remind you guys, as we always do this part of the show, that geocaching.com has spent many hours updating your profile page. You know, they've been working their butts off on the geocaching.com website lately. There's been a lot of updates coming out. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that later in our news section. But before we get to the news, we're going to start talking about our geocaching log of the week, or glow badge. And Chris, what can we tell people about glow badges?
Well, you know what I say nearly every week? Whether you wrote it or whether you read it, we want to hear about it. Because great logs simply make geocaching better. Send an email to feedback@cachingnw.com. You can call in to 253-693-TFTC or use the voicemail tool on the website and show us how you glow.
That's right. And this week's glow was submitted by friend of the podcast and frequent listener, loyal listener, Wet Coaster. Heck, he's even been a guest on the podcast, as I recall. So, thanks to Wet Coaster for this log. It's from GC45Z96, beer from Belgium. I wonder if they have a beer that goes with waffles. That's different. Mm. Anyway, the glow reads, "This was my fourth and final puzzle for the day. I enjoyed solving it. Always nice when the solution comes easily. And was really happy to find a good parking spot within a very short distance of the cache. Night was falling, so I had to work quickly. I waited out the muggles, and when the coast was clear, I dove into the shrubbery, i.e. the matching shrubbery to the spoiler pick. After a bit of reaching and poking, I spied the cache and was able to retrieve it. I decided I would take it back to the van to open and sign so that I could be more stealthy, as several muggles had emerged out of nowhere, and I did not want them to see the container. I'd slipped into my pocket to hide it from view. In fact, to my horror, one of the muggles seemed to be coming right up to me. He had a very wild look in his eyes, and those eyes were staring right at me. And then he blurted out, 'You know, don't you? How do you know?' Now I'm thinking, know what? What does he think I know? But I'm pretty sure that's not what he wants to hear. So I try answering a question with a vague question. So I say, I do. He carries on rambling about something. I'm not really making it out, though, but I'm saying, uh-huh, and trying to engage while I figure out what's going on because he's blocking my path to my vehicle. I take in that he's probably in his late 20s. He's carrying a backpack, and he's dragging a small rolling carry-on. His multicolored striped shirt is open to the navel, exposing a somewhat hairy chest. He seems distraught, but I'm not clear why yet. He continues to remain rooted in place, about 10 feet away, just staring at me. And then he gets even closer, and he says, "Why didn't they tell me I was a hermaphrodite? I didn't even have a choice." Now, this is not exactly where I thought the conversation was headed, and I didn't know the answer to this one either, so I tried something like, "Wow, they certainly should have told you." They added, "Being a hermaphrodite doesn't make me gay." So I said, "No, of course it doesn't. It just means you're unique and special." I know, cue the Barney music. It just came out of my mouth. They responded with, "I'm not unique. There are lots of hermaphrodites." I said something like, "Of course there are, but none of them are exactly like you, just like no one is exactly like me." They're walking away at this point, and I start for my van. They decides to throw one last strange comment into our conversation, and they says, "You're not unique, you know. Neither am I. Everyone has an exact double out there." So, well, on my way to the van now, I say, "I hope it'll meet my double, as I don't think I could handle that." I breathe a sigh of relief as I get inside the van, sign the log, and give my muggle friend some time to get well down the road. I then hop out and return the cash to its spot. That goes down as the weirdest muggle encounter I have ever had. TFTC.
That would go down as the weirdest encounter with any person.
Pretty much, yeah.
Ever had that? Jim, I love the fact that we make you read stuff like this, and you just, you can get right through it.
Yeah.
I could not have gotten through that log.
There are a few times that I wish I had read ahead more than this week.
White Coaster, thank you so much for submitting your experience. That was unique and special. That it log was. Itself is a special little snowflake.
Isn't it though?
Oh, wow.
You know, they should have told me.
We should have told Jim. But.
You wouldn't think that it had to tell him.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that is awesome. White Coaster, thank you so much for sending that in.
Now, was it a real story? Or did you just make it up so that I'd have to read it on the podcast?
Oh,
either way, it makes for compelling podcasting.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And now everybody is going to want to know the GC code for that puzzle cache. Well, which is there? GC45Z96.
That's right.
Yeah. All right.
So you go look it up because I'm not reading it again.
So if you want to find the final location for GC45Z96, just drive around in your van. Watch for the guy in the multicolored shirt.
Open to his navel.
Yeah.
And just start shouting out, "Who's unique?" Yeah. See who responds. And then you'll, I'm right at ground zero.
Iham says, "Challenge accepted."
You love me.
I know. It just came out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Dorimore, in the chat, you can't make that stuff up.
That's right. Yeah.
No. Mm-mm.
Wow. Well, folks, hey, thank you. So first of all, White Coaster, thank you for sending that in. That's spectacular. And folks, if you have any kind of milestone cache celebration that you want to share with us, why not call it in to 253-693-TFTC and share it with the entire Northwest geocaching community. You can even use our voicemail tool on the website. And I think to that end, Mr. of the Northwest, do we have some to share?
We certainly do there, Mr. of the Monkey. Sorry. No, there's no of the. It's just Mr. Monkey. We have feedback. Well, we have a milestone from Team Finn. They're very excited. Here we go.
This is Team Finn calling in from Puget Sound. We just celebrated our 1,000th milestone yesterday at Geocaching HQ in Seattle, and I wanted to share it with the entire Caching Northwest community. Thanks for the great podcast, guys.
How very nice. 1,000. We should give him a little round of applause there. And doing it at HQ, nonetheless.
Yeah, nice one. Nice job, Team Finn.
But we're not done.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
Now how much would you pay? Let's have some more feedback. This time from our good buddy Limax.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Limax. I'm actually calling in another milestone. Yes, it has been a while. I just got cache number 2100 at the final Venona event last Saturday. Yes, even I can have round numbers as milestones, and this was kind of an accidental one, but I felt it was quite fitting, seeing as the Venona events are a real great challenge for the geocachers of the Bay Area, although all I did this time was go on one of the retrieval missions rather than actually being able to help out with the activities. In other years, I might be able to do more. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, congratulations on a round number cash.
Yeah, that is unique. For Limax often does unique numbers for his milestones.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, but he's not alone. Other people do too, right?
In that vein,
yes.
Now we have feedback from the voicemail tool on the website. Oh, yes. Three feedbacks for the price of one.
If only Wet Custer had used that tool.
You wouldn't have to have read about the hermaphrodite. You could have just listened. Here's one from IHAM. Who's in the chat, by the way?
Hello, this is IHAM calling in another milestone. Find number 2,345. That is find number 2345. This milestone was at GC59Fox0Delta. That is the MVG-OA2 Nice Legs cache, hidden by none other than our illustrious host, Land Monkey. This is our final cache find on our recent trip north of the border. It was a fun one. Thanks, and keep on caching.
Wow, what an honor to be a milestone cache like that for IHAM.
That's great.
Thank you very much. And I also have to say that a future glow is going to be IHAM's log from that cache because it was well written. It was an enjoyable little glow. So we will include that at some point in the future.
That's great.
Yeah, thanks, IHAM, and congratulations. Again, like we've said, milestones don't have to be the 1,000s. They don't have to be the milestones officially noted by geocaching.com in your profile or your profile stats. It can really be any number that's special to you for any reason, mm-hmm. and we would love for you to share it with us by calling in to 253-693-TFTC or using the voicemail tool on the website.
Which works well, as IHAM just demonstrated. So make sure you use that tool. It's a great one. So this week in Northwest Caching, all kinds mm-hmm. of stuff is fun that's happened. Yeah. I got a cache this week. I know that shocks people because they think all I do is talk about them, but I actually did. It was a new virtual up at Pike West Market. That was a lot of fun. Oh, yeah. And for listeners out there, why don't you share? Why don't you share the stories? Share the stories in the chat.
How long have you been nursing that beer?
Ash.
Yes. We'll just talk with Lish all night long.
Absolutely.
Put some stories in the chat. Hashtag FTAS for the after show. Tell us about your geocaching updates and what you've been up to on this U.S. holiday week.
Awesome. So, yeah, it is a weekend. So how does this work? It's Thanksgiving tonight, Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Is Thanksgiving for you guys? Is it always the Thursday?
Yes.
It is.
Okay, so it's always a Thursday. Therefore, the Friday is always a stat? Is that how that works? Or is today a stat?
Friday is always Black Friday.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's take the shopping silliness out. But like,
yeah, I agree.
So Thanksgiving is always the last Thursday in November.
That's so we can milk a 4-day weekend, really, is the biggest reason for that.
Nice.
Most employers give you the Friday following off.
Unless you work retail.
Unless you work retail, yes. So that makes it a 4-day weekend.
Not bad. Not bad at all. And therefore, the whole Black Friday thing has occurred.
Well, now, then you got that.
Yeah. Interestingly, Black Friday didn't used to be a thing until the last few years, last handful of years up here in Canada. And we've just sort of taken it on. But it's kind of
The infection has spread north. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's kind of like out of control, the whole thing. So I don't know. Now, of course, those who are watching the video will see that I have, in honor of the fact that it is U.S. Thanksgiving, put on my celebratory lights.
That's
on,
right.
On my profile here. So
I have been corrected.
Yes, you have.
It is not the last Thursday. It is the fourth Thursday of...
Of, and this year there are five Thursdays, so
yes,
so that's important.
Of November,
that really messed you up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So Jim, you got out and found virtual cache. You found that Pike Place Market one.
That was fun.
Now that's is that Bounce who put that out?
Exactly. Yes.
Uh-huh. Very cool, Bounce.
I was working in the area, had a dinner break, and so that was great.
Yeah. Keats in the chat says there are no such things as weekends for retail workers.
That's right.
That's true.
Yes. Family members can appreciate that sentiment. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to finding that. I am coming down to join you guys at PodCon in Seattle in early December, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to go and get that virtual while I'm down there. So
yeah, you should be able to.
We'll figure that out. But we did get out for some caching ourselves, the monkeys, this past weekend as well. Saturday was great weather. The rest of the week sucked. So we took advantage of the good weather on Saturday, went down to Larrabee State Park and found a, not exactly a metric buttload of caches, but a good number, and had a really good walk. Got started at dawn and got out of the park well after sunset. So
that's like a metric.
This time of year, that's like 4 hours, you know?
Yeah,
pretty much. That was a lot of fun, though. How about you, Chris?
No, I didn't get out and do any caching this week. I've been spending time with my family. There's some medical issues going on, and that's required all of my attention. Though, I didn't do any caching, but I did work on a puzzle cache. Does that count as something?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It does, and I'll clarify my earlier comment. It is a good thing that you were spending time with your family. It's not a good thing that there are health issues, but
yeah,
that everything works out.
Yeah. So, yes, I was able to determine the location of a puzzle cache. Wasn't able to get it yet, but I'll work on that later.
Right arm. Okay, and I see we've already got some Fatask going on there in the chat, so we will get to that when we get to the after show. That's awesome. That's thanks, you guys. Keep throwing that stuff out there. Well, you know what? Let's move into some news. The news. All right. So... first piece of news we have to share with you guys. You've probably already seen this article on the geocaching.com blog, but if you haven't, they have noted there is a new dashboard tool for cache owners. The article writes, just yesterday just yesterday we added a new owner maintenance tool to the dashboard. If one or more of your geocaches may have a problem, you will now see a widget on the top of your dashboard. A problem with the cache could be full or soggy logbook, change of the hiding location, or a broken or missing cache container. The owner maintenance tool displays geocaches in need based on an algorithm we created to calculate a hidden health score. This algorithm is based on a combination of logs and circumstances. That's quite interesting. So I'm now editorializing here. So I went and looked at my profile. I didn't see anything in there, so I guess it's a good thing. But I found that quite fascinating that it's not just somebody logs and needs maintenance and it pops up. There's other criteria that they're actually scanning the logs in your caches for. I didn't realize that. So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to, not that I want that to come up on my dashboard, but I'm kind of curious to see how it works. And
maybe we should have a needs maintenance party.
Or we could. It's let me just officially state, not my idea this time.
Oh, you know how long it took for you to get a Canadian travel trackable tag? It could take a while longer if this was your idea.
Good. So there you go. So keep an eye on your dashboard every time you log into geocaching.com and watch to see if that new little feature pops up. Mm. Now, one of the questions that I've heard asked is this also in the app? And I believe the answer is no, it is not in the app at this point in time, it is just on your the web-based dashboard on your webpage.
So, well, and they're doing a lot of things to the dashboard, which reminds me that I really should actually log into the dashboard more frequently. I tend to use CGO when I'm out and about for finding and logging and everything. And I go weeks, months, and never log into my dashboard. So I really should go check that out.
Never log into the actual website?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. There's probably a lot of people who never do.
Yeah.
Or rarely do. I'm in there often, but that's just the way I happen to move in a circular motion. All right.
Talking about round and round.
Yeah, you don't gather any moss.
Try not to. Any other news? What else have we got here?
Well, let's see. The traffic report today. No, never mind. That was
Les. Thanks, Les. You know what? Caching in the Northwest should do a turkey giveaway from a helicopter.
Ooh, what a great idea. What could go wrong?
Oh, Scott is my witness. I thought turkeys could fly.
Okay.
Well, we are rapidly approaching the end of the calendar year here. And you, yes, you, can celebrate the new year with two, not one, but two new souvenirs. You know, 2017, it's been a fun year for geocaching, hasn't it? You know, they celebrated 3 million active geocaches. During 2017, we went caching around the globe with Where's Signal the Frog, found pirate booty with the lost treasure of Mary Hyde, and found cache number 2345 for IHAM. It said that right there from geocaching.com, right there. But, well, it's time to start looking ahead. Flush 2017 down the drain and move on to 2018. Let's make 2018 the best year ever. To get off to a good start, geocaching.com has announced two new souvenirs. You can get one souvenir to celebrate your last cache of 2017 and another souvenir to celebrate the first cache of 2018. All you have to do is find a cache or attend an event on December 31st of 2017, and you'll get that last cache souvenir. And then I bet you can figure this next part out. Find a different cache or attend a different event January 1st, 2018 to earn the first cache of 2018 souvenir. No, you can't have a two-hour event from 11 p.m. on December 31st to 1 a.m. January 1. That doesn't count.
Oh. There goes my idea.
You have to submit two different logs for two different geocaches and or events, one in each day.
And you can't have two events back-to-back.
You cannot. That is against the rules.
Yeah, I know. They're really clamping down on that.
Absolutely. So, 2018, it's a fresh start. It's a new year. How will you end 2017 and start anew in 2018? Whatever you do, make sure to use that voicemail tool on the website or call 253-693-TFTC and tell us all about it.
Because we want to hear it.
That's right.
There you go.
Hey, last week, bison tubes were brought up.
Okay.
Mostly, you know, where the name came from. Wet Coaster sent us a link to the geocaching blog, The Secret Double Lives of Geocaching Containers. Actually, it was quite an interesting read, but I'm only going to pull out the bison tube. And here's what it says. There's no secret that these tubes look nothing like a real bison, not even close. So what's the reason behind the name? These containers were originally created by a company named, are you ready? Yes. Bison Designs.
Ooh. What?
Yeah, the company originally made aluminum carabiners in multiple shapes, including dog bones, mouse ears, and more because, you know, reasons. Seeking out new things to create out of aluminum, the need for a small, waterproof container to carry medicine in arose, and thus the bison tube was born.
Nice.
Also, the need to carry small rolls of paper.
Well, yeah.
And hide them in a cedar.
Yeah, of course. All right. Hey, in the chat, when we were talking about New Year's and end of the year and everything, Dora Moore says, last New Year's Eve, I watched Land Monkey and Keats climb a big ladder in a snowstorm. And that is true. And thanks to actually also Mr. GeoNavPros. Not sure if he's in the chat tonight or not, but he brought the ladder. So here you go.
There you go.
It's a team effort.
Is this a Canadian New Year celebration thing that I'm not aware of?
Yes. Come on up.
Okay.
We got a ladder for you, buddy.
Yay.
You climbed your way out of the old year into the new year.
Oh, I see.
That's the way that.
So you climb the ladder in 2017, they pull the ladder out, and you've got to find your way down into 2018?
That would just be cruel. Hmm. We're not animals up here.
Oh.
My goodness.
That's okay. Limax says he can't remember what he did last New Year's Eve. That probably is a good New Year's Eve then. BC Rock Crawler says find a cache at 23:59 and another at 1 minute past midnight.
Yeah,
that would also work. That would
as long as they're different caches, that'll work.
Yeah, you don't want to log the same cache twice. That's crazy.
You can't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. You can't do that anymore.
You can't.
Right. All right. Well, you know what? Why don't we get into tonight's topic?
I thought you'd never ask.
I'm asking. Would we like to do that?
Why not? Let's take a vote. No, this is not a democracy. Let's go.
No, it's not. It really
is. It's a hostile Canadian takeover.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know what? Bring your passport. Check the border crossing websites. Pick your crossing well. We are going to head into the Northwest. So, you know, we're going to talk about, perhaps, if you're up here in the Southwest part of Canada and you want to head down to the northwest part of the U.S. Which also sometimes could be heading up to the northwest part of the U.S. if you're going to Alaska, but anyways, I digress. What we could be talking about being in the northwest part of the U.S. and heading into the southwest part of Canada, those are all different ways we travel about here in the Northwest. But we also want to share, for we know there's a number of our listeners who live outside of the Pacific Northwest area, who perhaps you haven't even visited us here yet. And
what?
My goodness, why not? But
I know.
Let's give you some tips about things to consider if you're going to come and visit us and how to get around, some key things to do, stuff like that. I think that would be a fun episode. What do you think, guys?
Let's do it.
Let's do it next week. This week we're... Oh, no, no. Sorry, we'll do it this week.
that's the tryptophan talking.
Yes, that's why he's the boss.
I'm really tired tonight.
All right.
You can't fight tryptophan.
No, you know, and so as we were saying, there's all kinds of different ways you can move across the borders and get between different significant parts of the Northwest, crossing that international border.
Yeah, most of them are legal.
Most of them are legal. Digging a tunnel, not advised.
No.
Climbing over the Canadian wall, not advised.
No.
Well, you know, it's a shrubbery, but
still.
Some of the other items are things like the Bolt bus, the train. I think IHAM and Dime Monkey are Monkey Cakes recently came up here via the train and visited and explored and had a great time. So all great ways to get across the border. Now on the topic of the train, I want to throw this in because this fascinates me and I'm going to derail us for a few minutes.
Train joke.
See what you did there.
Your governor, my Washington State friends, recently spoke at our BC legislature and pitched the idea of a high-speed train from Seattle to Vancouver. What do you think?
Like a Hyperloop type high-speed train?
I don't know technical specifics like that or train names, but it was a single rail elevated for a lot of it, from what I can see. What I understand is that Washington State has or is in the process of investing $1 million in a feasibility study.
There goes my money.
Your tax.
What do you think? I love the idea of high-speed trains. I think they're great.
I do too.
Is it going to work? I don't know. Is he planning to make Canada pay for it?
I don't know. So I don't know what the backroom agreements would be, but I would think that it would probably not be a 50-50 type arrangement, since 80% of the track to get from Seattle to Vancouver would be in Washington State.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you know, Americans want to go visit Canada, but why would Canadians want to come down here?
There you go. Well, I think that would. So IHAM in the chat says it is a Hyperloop train feasibility study. So there you go. Cool. I am not familiar with the term Hyperloop train. So that's
cool. I can't remember his name. I suddenly lost it.
Elon Musk.
Thank you. Uh-huh. The inventor of the Tesla automobile.
Very cool.
Guy
who has a Tesla semi now.
Yes. So. Has come up with a Hyperloop idea. It is an encapsulated car, you know, in a tunnel. Very
high speed.
It's basically
like a bank tube.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a much bigger scale.
like a nail gun.
Yeah, kind of.
Like when you use the electromagnet, you wrap copper wire down a small tube, and then you put a nail in one end. Fire it at the wall. Not that I've ever done this.
Why does that bring such a large grin to your face?
Because it's almost as good as lighting stuff on fire, I guess. I don't know.
It's right up there with potato guns and,
So, he's proposed this, and they've looked at it in several cities. And are they building one or two? I can't remember. I want to say, like, L.A. and East Coast, like Virginia to D.C. Oh, Maryland to D.C.? I can't remember. Boston to D.C.,
I heard L.A. to Bay Area.
Yeah.
That would also make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Very cool. So,
but, Dora Moore already has the Cashapult. It's the same idea.
Yeah, pretty much.
There you go. Similar concept, yeah. So there's one way in the future, perhaps. But at this point in time, in present state, there's all kinds of great ways to get around, whether it's by car, train, ferry, airplane.
All those things would be fun.
In BC, you have a Compass Pass, right? That gets you on public transport?
Yeah, that's a sort of a universal transit pass.
Okay. And then here, at least in the Seattle area, I don't know how widespread the Orca Pass is.
Yeah, the Puget Sound area.
I think it's just Puget Sound, yeah.
Right. Oh, well, okay. And to your point, with the Compass Pass, it's not for the entire province of BC. It's really for the lower mainland.
Okay.
The greater area.
Yeah.
It's the metro transit area.
Limex says, I just like driving my car. I'm weird. To which I say, no, you're just a Californian. But,
Americans love their cars. They're not going to give them up.
That's right.
So perhaps you're coming from Kansas and you're not going to drive here. You're going to fly in. Maybe you should rent a vehicle.
You could rent a vehicle. You could rent a SUV, an RV, a car. You could take the ferry over the water. You could run a 4x4. And, probably should still cross at a legal border crossing, which, by the way, when I was up in the north, near the border there, I looked for a cache right there at the Peace Arch. And I parked at a small park there just south of the border. And I noticed that there was just no fence, no nothing between the park and a line of houses on like street zero or
zero
something like
Avenue,
that.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Zero Avenue. Yeah.
What is to stop you from just walking across the street and visiting your friends that live there on Zero Avenue? Is there
snipers?
Anybody going to say anything to you?
Cameras just, and people with guns. So probably somebody is going to air quotes say something to you. Yeah.
Can you imagine if you lived right there in Blaine there and your friend lived on Zero Avenue and you just wanted to go over for,
I'll tell you what you do is you both get out on your back porch and just yell at each other.
Hey, how you doing? Good. How you doing? Because yelling across an international border has never caused any problems at all.
Not between our borders, at least in the last, 50 years.
You could drive a Jeep to an international border and make a run for it. That doesn't end so well.
Yeah, not at all.
Now, maybe you're going to rent a large 4x4 and try to cross the border without permission. I wouldn't recommend that. Whether you cross illegally or I recommend legally, those vehicles are nice, especially if it's wintertime, because even a legal border crossing on the highway might involve traction tires in a 4x4 vehicle. But really, you know, a standard old beater car is going to get you all the sights and caches that you want right here in the Northwest. You could go motorhome, RV. Those are always nice. I've considered sometimes buying one as a primary residence. It's like having a vehicle and a motel room all in one place. Costs a little more than a automobile passenger car, especially if you're going to take a ferry. And we've mentioned the ferries. The ferries are a good option. But when you get to a bigger vehicle, trailers, motorhomes, any of those things, they cost a lot more to put on the ferry.
Yes, they do.
So keep that in mind.
And, you know, to get to some places, especially the San Juan Islands, you're going to need to take a ferry. There's no way to drive there. So, you know.
Swim.
Well, yes. You'd have to be a very good swimmer. But, you know, ferries in this part of the country are a standard of life. So while you're here, there's things you're going to want to see.
And like what?
I'm looking just in the Seattle area to start with.
Okay.
Of course, if you're a geocacher, you're going to want to see HQ. Geocaching HQ in Fremont. While you're there, check out the Fremont Troll, because
that's pretty unique.
It really is. It's one of those things you want to see. You're going to want to stop and see Pike Place Market. I didn't put an S on it this time. I've learned my lesson. There's a virtual there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A brand new virtual by one of our listeners.
Thank you, Bounce Bounce.
If you're at Pike Place Market, you're not far from the Space Needle, Space Center, Pacific Science Center.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to check that out.
Very cool.
You know, you're also going to want to see Cary Park. That's one of those great viewpoints of Seattle that's really worth a stop.
And if you've ever seen a touristy postcard picture or a visiting newscaster or like a sporting event or anything like that, you see this picture, this iconic view of the Seattle skyline with Mount Rainier in the distance and the tall buildings in Seattle and the Space Needle in the foreground, taller than anything else around. And then you come in person to visit Seattle, and you realize the Space Needle is not really nearly as tall as the rest of the skyline. It's all a matter of perspective. And that perspective is most often and most frequently photographed and viewed from Cary Park.
Yes. Okay. So if you come to Seattle from the south, you can see the Space Needle is this little bitty thing next to these huge buildings, and you look and you go, is that the Space Needle? That little thing? Yeah.
It's still pretty cool, even though it's not as tall as the skyscrapers. But
You look at it from Cary Park and you go, oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you you pull up there right at sunset and you just see lines of tripods and cameras.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Right. Yeah.
Magic hour right then.
There's another park, maybe a little bit north of that, where the Seattle Zoo is.
Woodland Park Zoo?
Woodland Park.
Woodland Park Zoo. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that a decent place to go and visit and check out?
Yeah, there's some great caches there, too.
Yeah, Woodland Park Zoo is one of the great zoos in our area. I would have to give the nod to the Tacoma Zoo, the Point Defiance Zoo. I think it's a little better, but,
And it's undergoing some big renovations. It's going to be even better.
Yes, exactly. It's probably not best to see right now with the renovations, but give it a year.
I liked geocaching in Point Defiance Park. It was beautiful there.
Yes. There's
some great stuff there.
Yes. The Point Defiance Bermuda Triangle, as it's called. GPS signals just don't work well there. I don't know what it is. IHAM says the gum wall is there at Pike Place Market. Well, the cache is there. It's currently disabled, as Wits End can attest.
Yeah, I decided I was going to look for that again, even though I swore I was never going to look for it again. I found the virtual there at Pike Place Market and then went to the gum wall and couldn't find it. Phoned a friend and, well, the friend here on the podcast said, oh, that's disabled. Well, that explains why I can't find it.
You know, it's funny. I looked at my, I think I pulled up the geocaching website. Looked there. I just got to find the smiley. Where's the smiley? I can't find, because it was disabled. Oh, no, I pulled up Cachely. That's it. It was disabled. It was a green X. You know, instead of a yellow smile, and it's like, why can't I find where this cache is? Anyway.
So another time when I work up north, I'll look for that again.
IHAM also says several of the totally tubular caches there at Woodland Park.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Those are the ones I was thinking of.
Okay. Very cool. Neat.
Limax says, last time I visited Seattle 7 years ago, there was a park that had odd water tower you could climb on.
It's an old water tower.
I'm thinking Gasworks Park?
It might be odd, but it's an old water tower you could climb up on.
Well, Gasworks Park is right near HQ, right?
Yes.
That's
very close, yes.
Very close,
north,
yes.
North end of Lake Union.
Okay.
And that's an old Gasworks, obviously. This is the name of the park. But
it's
now
kind of it's a funky place, yeah.
Yeah, it really is funky. Last place that you've got to hit while you're in Seattle is the Museum of Flight.
Okay. Whereabouts is that?
That is at Boeing Field, a little south of Seattle.
Okay.
Couple of miles south. Now, my father and I just visited MOHAI, the Museum of, what's the A stand for?
History and Industry.
Oh, yeah, H. Yeah, History and Industry. That's it. And we didn't have enough time there, but it was actually quite fascinating.
Yeah, that's at the south end of Lake Union.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Okay, so you visited Seattle. Let's move a little outside of Seattle.
Okay.
You're going to want to go see Mount Rainier.
Yes, you are.
I personally like Paradise as the stop to get out. So you can drive right up Mount Rainier to Paradise. You're two-thirds of the way up the mountain, maybe?
Yep.
Yeah, ish.
Maybe half. Yeah. Maybe.
There's a couple of really good earth caches right there as well.
Exactly. Really? Of course, there are caches everywhere we're talking about. So, yeah, I like Paradise. There are other places to stop. Paradise has really changed in the last several years, though. It's got a hotel there, I believe, now.
There's a hotel. So we spent a lot of time in Mount Rainier this past summer and a couple of visits into Paradise on our way into the park. And there is a hotel. There's a ranger station. There's a general store. It's developed, but developed in a way that it still feels like you're in a national park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go.
So
that's a very
good job.
Very good statement. Next, you're probably going to want to see Chihuly Glass here in Tacoma.
Oh, yeah, the Museum of Glass.
Yes, the Museum of Glass. It's quite a stop. Also, yeah, Snoqualmie Falls. Snoqualmie Falls holds a special place in my heart. That's where I proposed to my wife.
Aw.
So you want to go see it for your own reasons. Don't propose to my wife there. That's awkward.
Good point.
Yeah. Another place in Washington to go see is the Gorge. It's in George, Washington.
George Washington.
It's a great place for concerts. In fact, there are so many concerts there in the summertime. If you're going to a concert in Washington, probably one in three chance you're going to the Gorge.
Now, I haven't been, so it's called the Gorge. Is it actually like an amphitheater in a gorge? Is that why it's referred to?
It's an outdoor amphitheater, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've not been there either, but.
Okay. That does sound pretty cool.
Yeah.
By the way, in the chat there, Monkey Cake says the water tower is at Volunteer Park.
Oh. Okay.
There you go. Thank you, Monkey Cakes.
And of course, IM says there's a great earth cache at Longmire, which is on the way up to Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. There's a lot of great earth caches in Rainier. Now, of course, the Rainier Geo Tour is no more, so you can't get the path tags or the coin any longer, I don't think. But it's still a great place to visit.
PC Rockcrawler wants to know, if you can't propose to your wife, can he propose to you, Chris?
Oh, there you
it go. Would be awkward. So
yes. Also awkward.
Let's go with no.
Okay.
Please, no.
But it would make a great glow segment. I'm just
yes, it would.
If you do, call it in to 253-693-TFTC.
There you go. All right. Well, you know, we've talked about some key places to visit if you're coming into the Seattle and Washington State area. Let me speak on behalf of British Columbia. Now, there are some very common, well-known, iconic spots that people want to see if they're coming into Vancouver or Victoria areas. Of course, Stanley Park and the seawall. Nice any time of year, as long as it's open. Sometimes when it's really, really, really stormy, they actually close segments of the seawall. important thing to know about the seawall, if you're going to visit Stanley Park, is that it is a one-way loop if you're going to bike the seawall. Mm. You can go in one direction. You can't go in both directions. So something to be aware of. Now, that said, there are lots of roads that intersect and cross and paths and everything. So beautiful place to visit. Stanley Park, any time of the year, always recommend if people are coming to town. It's a great place to stop and visit. If you're planning to head over to Vancouver Island, a very popular stop just past the ferries, well, I guess maybe about halfway between the ferries and actual city of Victoria, is Bouchard Gardens.
Mm.
It's very touristy. So, of course, in the big tourist seasons, it's very popular and a little expensive and tough to get to. But
I took my mom there once. It had been a lifelong dream of hers to go there. We had a good time.
Yeah, it's still a beautiful place. And it's well apportioned. Of course, if you're going to Victoria anyways, even just the ferry ride can be great. The ferry from Tawasin to Victoria takes you through the Gulf Islands. You go through an area called Active Pass, where there's a high probability you will see orcas and other sea life. And it's just beautiful going through there. I always love taking that route. Now, back to Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. Right in the heart of downtown Vancouver is, of course, the cruise ship terminal, also known as Canada Place.
Mm-hmm.
But right beside that is the conference center and the word, it's slipping from my mind.
Olympic Cauldron.
Olympic Cauldron. Thank you. Yes, that yes. Is definitely a stop to see. It's a very unique and quite, I think, quite beautiful piece of art. And
it's right fun.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's fun. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and then right near the Olympic Cauldron is also the digital orca, or the 8-bit orca.
Yeah.
Which is a kind of an iconic spot where you can, not only can you see that neat statue by Douglas Coupland, but you can also have a wonderful view of the North Shore Mountains right from that location and get some great photos. So all stuff to see in downtown Vancouver. There's a lot to see and do in the downtown Vancouver area, including some great geocaches. Sorry?
We can't cover it all. We just have to cover some highlights.
Yeah. Now, heading out of Vancouver. Now, I head over to North Vancouver. Of course, a very popular stop is the Capilano Suspension Bridge. Everybody talks about that. But, you know, I'm going to give you an insider scoop here. If you don't want to stand in a two-hour-long lineup and pay $1 million to go across the suspension bridge, head in a slightly different direction, one river over to the Lynn Canyon Suspension Bridge and Trails, where the cost is free.
I like that.
And it's a similar experience from the bridge perspective. Now, they've added other features into the Capilano Suspension Bridge Park, et cetera. So, you know, there's more to do there than just the bridge. But, you know, if you're over as a geocacher and you don't want to spend a lot of money, do the Lynn Canyon Suspension Bridge. And there's some great trails, including a where I go.
Oh,
right there. So, you know,
You're not selling it. I'd rather wait 2 hours and pay $1 million.
Okay. Well, you know, your cost.
That makes one of us.
Oh, yep.
No. Oh, that was supposed to be sarcastic. Sorry. It didn't come out that way.
Nope. Well, hey, and there's a lot of really neat spots to stop on the North Shore. Also, if you go to the North Van Quay, Quay, it's a great place to hang out. There's lots of little markets. Great place. Lots, again, geocaches, beautiful views. And if you're heading from downtown Vancouver to the North Shore, you take what we call the Sea Bus, which is a passenger ferry that takes you to the Quay, the Lonsdale Quay, it's actually called in North Van, from the downtown Vancouver area.
One that stops at Granville Island, too? Is that?
No, that is different.
Different little water taxi.
Passenger ferry. So that's more of a water taxi. Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun too. Granville.
Yeah. That's a neat spot too. Absolutely. Now, you know, hitting you once you're on the North Shore, again, so many trails. That's where our ski mountains are. It's just a beautiful place to visit. But I could spend all day talking about places to stop in Vancouver. So let's say you keep heading up towards Whistler. You want to maybe stop in the Squamish area and check out the Sea to Sky Gondola. Again, a little pricey, but definitely a very unique and wonderful experience to check out. Now, let's talk about heading out the other way. So if you're heading out and you're going to head up towards Gold Country, like where I took my good podcast friends this past summer.
Yes, we had a great time.
Yeah, some of the places that we stopped that I would recommend, Bridalveil Falls is a wonderful set of waterfalls just out in that direction past Hope. And actually, no, it's on the way to Hope. It's between Chilliwack and Hope. But keep going out that way. And another location that you'll find that is just past the City of Hope is the Othello Tunnels. Now, I recently learned that the Othello Tunnels have made a cameo in a science fiction movie. I'm sure they've probably been in a lot of movies, but there's earth caches and traditional caches and all kinds of great stuff there at the Othello Tunnels as well. But definitely, definitely worth the stop and checking that out. And, you know, again, we're just giving you guys just a small sampling of some of the really cool stuff to add that maybe you didn't think about adding into your visit to Northwest. So,
yeah.
You got to stop me. I'm going to just keep talking about BC.
There's just some great stuff to see in BC. There's no two ways about it. Even non-cash related. I remember when you took us up there, Mrs. Chris of the Northwest and I kind of geeked out over. We'd watched a show, Highway Through Hell, was it, with about the towing company in BC that's up the Coquihalla Highway. And we drove on that on the way up to Gold Country or on the way back technically, but some great stuff up there, even waterfalls that are terribly overrun with mosquitoes.
Peter Falls, we decided to call it.
Oh, yeah. We walked through the long trail. No, it wasn't a long trail. We walked through the woods and we came out to the end. It's like, oh, mosquitoes, done, run. Okay, saw it, go.
We've probably talked about that visit before on the podcast, but I got to tell you, we had been to that same spot with other people at least two other times before we brought you guys there. Never had that problem. With you guys, and I'm telling you, listeners, I have never had so many mosquitoes attack so voraciously at once. It was insane. We were all coated. It looked like, you know, the commercials they do for mosquito repellent, right? Where they put their arm in the box and all the mosquitoes are like,
it was that bad.
Pull out a bone, right? It was like that. It was insane. Yeah.
I came out into the clearing, and Mrs. Land Monkey and Mrs. Chris of the Northwest were just dancing this weird jig. I thought, what? Oh, I see what's going on now. Yes. Okay, snap a picture. Run.
There was a black cloud between us and the waterfall.
Yeah, it was not that part wasn't great. But the rest of the trip was a great trip. Great things to see in BC. As, you know, many places in the Northwest, including, let's pop a little to the south and go to Oregon. There's some great things to see in Oregon. It's another huge state in the U.S. Northwest, and we can't possibly cover all the wonderful things there are to see in Oregon. But just a few little highlights. Obviously, Portland. It's the first city that we hit when we traveled south from here down I-5. And you can go to Voodoo Donuts. You can go to OMSI, the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, where I am told you can sleep on a submarine. Sounds cool.
That sounds very cool.
Yeah, I toured a Russian submarine once in Seattle when it was here, but I've not slept on a submarine. That could be.
How long was the tour?
Well, the tour in Seattle was self-paced, so I suppose you could have stayed long enough to sleep there, but I didn't. I have always wanted to see OMSI. I actually never have. So I'm going to go there. There's some state parks there. I went to Shampooey State Park one time and stayed in a yurt. There's some great stuff there. Ham Radio Outlet. It's the closest ham radio retailer to Puget Sound there.
McMinnville, there's a museum, airplane museum. I don't know. I can't remember the name of
it. Yes, anyway, and the Spruce Goose is there, right?
There you go. That's what I was getting to.
Yes, we've been talking about planning a road trip to go see the Spruce Goose. I saw it in Long Beach, California years ago, but now it's up in Oregon.
That's cool.
I know that there's a place somewhere, and I'm sure Subway Mark and somebody, probably Subway Mark for sure, could tell me. There's a place somewhere in Western Oregon that has a great model railroad, like not like HO scale, but the kind that you sit on and ride, those kind of scales, like you see Walt Disney ride in the 50s, that I really want to go visit sometime.
That'd be cool.
Multnomah Falls is a beautiful area just outside of Portland along the Columbia River Gorge. Haystack Rock, if you go out to the coast, you can go out to Tillamook and Cannon Beach and some great tourist sites along the Oregon coast. You can go to Tillamook Cheese Factory. We've done that. Mm-hmm. And if you keep going south down I-5 and then jump inland a ways, you can go to Crater Lake, which is, that's an amazing place. It's a... A lake.
Sorry, go ahead.
What is it? Formed a volcanic crater. Wizard Island is out in the middle of it. It's at a pretty high altitude, as I recall. We camped near there several years ago in, I want to say it was June something, and they still had not opened the entire highway around the perimeter because of snow.
Wow. So, it's kind of like Mount Rainier scenario.
Yeah, there were some places there. You could go to the visitor center and stuff and drive parts of it, but you couldn't drive the whole perimeter yet. Wow. So, beautiful, beautiful place.
And I was going to say, it's more than just a short drive inland.
It's a couple hours, yeah, as I recall. And I remember we didn't camp at Crater Lake. We camped somewhere along the way. I don't remember the town we stayed in at Oregon State Park there. And I remember we got up one morning and said that we're going to go to Crater Lake today, and we drove in. And it was one of the longest straight stretches of highway through trees I've ever been on. It just kept going and going and going and going.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Feedback in the chat there. Monkey Cake says it's the Evergreen Air and Space Museum in McMinnville. Decachinator's engineering banquet was held under the Spruce Goose.
Nice.
That would be cool.
Very cool. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I saw the Spruce Goose. It used to be housed in a dome in Long Beach, California, right next to the Queen Mary. And I saw it there years ago. But I'd like to see it again. Take my family to go see that.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to jump over to Idaho. Idaho
also
is
great caching.
Huh?
Also great caching. Great
it has
sites.
Great caching in Idaho. And Idaho has some very rugged places to visit. Well, did you know Yellowstone National Park is in Idaho?
I did.
Yeah.
Is it?
Part of it.
Part of it is.
Okay. If you look at the map, the bulk of Yellowstone National Park is in Wyoming.
Right.
With a little bit in Montana and a little bit in Idaho.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, fair enough. I'll give you that one.
Some of the host's favorite place, Craters of the Moon.
Yeah, I've been there. That's a really cool place.
That's a cool
Love
place.
Love that place.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
You have Lake Coeur d'Alene. That's a beautiful spot to visit, especially in the warmer months.
I parasailed over Lake Coeur d'Alene.
Did you
Great
really?
Memories. Yeah.
There you go.
Lake Penderay.
Penderay. That's a beautiful. I've been there too. That's a beautiful, beautiful.
It's one of those you can't read it. You just have to say it.
Yeah. That's like Coeur d'Alene. Coeur d'Alene, Penderay. That's up north. If you go into Coeur d'Alene and take Highway 95 north up a ways, Penderay is up there in a beautiful area, Idaho Panhandle.
And you can't visit Idaho without thinking about potatoes and going to the Idaho Potato Museum.
Well, I beg to differ because my in-laws live in Idaho, and I've been to Idaho numerous times, and I have never been to the Potato Museum. I've been to the Buck Knives Factory in Coeur d'Alene, Post Falls, but not the... Where is the Potato Museum?
Idaho.
Thanks for narrowing that down, Captain Obvious.
I don't remember what city it's in. Hold on.
Research department will take care of that.
All right. So yeah, there's definitely, and as with every other area we've talked about, I mean, the Land Monkeys, we spent a lot of time in Idaho and Utah this summer. And you're right. There's just so many amazing places to visit there. A lot of, you know, if you're a geologist or a amateur geologist, there are some amazing spots in Idaho to check out. There's a lot of dinosaur beds. So a lot of fossil excavation areas. And something else that's really, really cool is the Thousand Springs. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Thousand Springs, but that's in Idaho, and it's just south of the Panhandle as you're driving across. And it's closer to the Oregon side, but effectively there's an area where the rock bed up above the riverbank is quite porous. And so the water just, the groundwater just pours out in as natural springs out and into as effectively like waterfalls down into the river below. And it's just an amazing sight to see. So, you know,
that sounds fascinating.
Yeah. It's another one of those interesting things that unless you did a little bit of research, you might not know about, but again, Idaho, just tons of great things to see there too.
You know, suddenly it came to me where the Idaho Potato Museum is.
Really?
Yeah.
Just out of the blue.
Out of the blue. It's in Blackfoot, which is about halfway between Idaho Falls and Pocatello, right there on Highway 15.
Okay.
Oh. Well, Pocatello, if you're going there, you're right near South Idaho. No. Yeah, that's South Idaho's first. Yeah. That's one of the, that's a Jasmer cache right there.
Yes, it is.
Hey, you can go over to Rexburg and eat at the Hoagie Yogi. If you're into skiing, and really, I was going to say who isn't, but, well, I'm not. Mm. There is a ton of skiing in the Northwest. You can go to Mount Baker. You can go to Crystal Mountain. You can go to White Pass. You can go to Whistler. You can go to Black. You can go to all these places. And I am not qualified to talk about any of them because I've been skiing once in my life and probably never will again.
We've got tons of great ski mountains in the Northwest. Yeah. Again, we could all just list off bunches of them.
Yeah.
A personal favorite of mine on the North Shore here in Vancouver is Cypress, but Cypress is near and dear to my heart because that's where I worked during the Olympics, but it's also a great venue. It's really well lit. All the North Shore mountains are great, but the quality of the skiing depends on the weather right now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We've had this stupid Pineapple Express and there's no skiing on the North Shore mountains right now, but it'll come back.
It'll come back. Skiing is one of those things that I always wanted to be really good at. I always wanted to like it, and it's proved to me just how awkward and uncoordinated I truly am. And it's just skiing and I don't get along.
Wow. If you're awkward and uncoordinated, I shouldn't have a reason to live.
Well, at least when it comes to skiing, I am.
Okay.
I do okay, in Lederhosen and Schuhplattler, but strap skis to my feet. I do a lot of laying in the snowbank. Let's just say that.
There you go.
People say, how many times did you fall down? I said, every time I turned. I skied across the slope and plopped into the bank and stumbled to my feet and skied across the slope, plopped into the bank.
Oh, dear.
A wonderful day of skiing.
Yeah.
If you're not into skiing, most ski resorts also have a hill you can tube on. Get an inner tube and go down that and take a little rope lift back up. So
yeah, it's true. It's true. If you're not into skiing, the ski resorts tell us some great features. There's tubing runs. There's hot cocoa and hot cider and ski bunnies and a lodge.
Well, you know what else there is? As geocachers, there's snowshoeing at most of the ski resorts. There's trails, and a lot of trails will have winter available caches hanging on the trees. For finding when you're snowshoeing.
Wait, so. And I have, are you saying bisons hanging in cedars?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yes.
Well, sometimes they're larger than bisons too, but hey, they're a lot easier to find when you're on snowshoes and everything is white.
Yeah.
Classless internet domain routing. I've always wanted to snowshoe. It's something I've never done. And one of these years, I'm going to come up and invade land monkey territory and go snowshoeing with y'all.
I want to do it too. In fact, snowshoes are on sale right now at Costco, and I'm just going to grab a pair and start using them.
Can you rent them you rent skis?
Yeah.
You can rent them. I know you can rent them at REI.
Yeah. And up here, Mountain Equipment Co-op and a few other places, you can rent snowshoes.
One of these days, we're going to force you to drag us up snowshoeing.
Okay.
You're going to twist your arm, right?
I don't know. I've been hiking with Land Monkey.
It's not the snowshoeing that we have to twist his arm to do. It's taking us with him that we have to twist his arm to do.
I've been on a epic geocaching adventure with Land Monkey. I think he tried to kill me.
Yeah, we tend to really slow Land Monkey down. many levels.
Snowshoeing is not nearly as extreme a terrain. I would not go up some of the areas that I would go in the summertime. I would not go some of those same areas in the wintertime, let's put it that way. Anyways,
well, so we've had a couple of people mention some caches that you should do. You know, this whole show is about caches you should be doing in the Great Northwest. And we've talked about all of these. IHAM says you need to do the Chicken Channel.
Yeah,
I'm thinking he just recently did it.
Nice.
And Bounce Bounce says do the Ring of Fire cache.
Oh, yes. Washington. Very memorable.
And, there are, in all these locations we mentioned, there are hundreds of caches available. Okay, maybe not, but there's a bunch.
Yeah.
So while you're here in the Northwest, you know, not only are you traveling about geocaching, seeing our incredible sites, perhaps hitting a ski slope or two, but Land Monkey, what else should you be doing here in the Northwest?
Well, you should eat. Mm-hmm. Not only because you require sustenance to do all these amazing outdoor activities, but because we've got some food that's unique to the Northwest, and some of it isn't necessarily unique to the Northwest, but is
iconic.
Is iconic of the Northwest. Yeah. So, you know, if you're from the US and you're heading up north, of course we'll encourage you to stop at a Timmy's, get some Timbits.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's a thing, right? You got to do it.
And you can't miss them.
Yeah, it's hard to miss. You can trip over them. Often a favorite of people visiting Canada, whether you're in the West or the East or the central part of Canada, is to try poutine. It's definitely a thing. But, you know, let's focus a little more on Northwest stuff. And I would say, if you're heading over here, you got to try our seafood. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you're from the center of the continent, you get some great bass and trout and such. But our seafood is pretty spectacular. And we've got awesome wild Pacific salmon that can be made in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. So good. Yeah. Prawns and shrimp.
Alaskan king crab.
And, oh, yeah. There's so many great things to eat when it comes to seafood over here.
Even
and
our fast food seafood is still really good. That,
I was going to say, one of my favorite ways of eating seafood here on the West Coast and the Northwest is sushi. We have so many. It's like we have as many sushi restaurants as we have Tim Hortons. I don't know about in Washington State, but mm-hmm. I would imagine it's similar.
There's a lot of them, yeah.
And that's not a bad thing.
We actually have more sushi restaurants than Tim Hortons down
here. Yeah, I bet you do. but, you know, I like to tell this story. I was visiting Denver for work once, and the folks I was with there had said, hey, there's a sushi restaurant here in Denver. Let's go for sushi. And I said, hey, let's go for beef.
Yeah. So, good call.
Because I'm sure it was fine, but this is the thing, is once you get spoiled by having fresh seafood sushi yeah. here on the West Coast. Yeah.
Yeah. The farther you get inland,
the yeah. less fresh it is.
Yeah.
Let's there say go. There's a spot here in Tacoma. I can go down and get salmon that was caught that morning. And you know, there's go. Nothing like it. Monkey Cake says, you can't beat smoked salmon or cedar planked salmon. I've done cedar plank salmon here at my house. My parents mm-hmm. wanted it for their anniversary. And, you know, you really can't do it wrong. Once it flakes, it's good to eat, and yeah. it's fantastic.
Absolutely. And BC Rockcrawler throws in candied salmon. Oh, that is so good. Yeah, that's a nice yeah. treat.
Smoked salmon jerky.
Yeah. IHAM says sushi should be within shooting distance of the coast. Yeah, yeah. Don't stop at a gas station in Kansas and expect the best sushi you're going to ever taste.
I wouldn't say don't stop at a gas station on the West Coast and expect good sushi either.
Yeah,
I would suggest
that's true.
Maybe setting your bar a little bit higher, but yeah.
Awesome. Another thing that Seattle is known for. Now, Seattle is second in the nation to San Francisco in one area.
What's that?
The number of microbreweries. Mm. San Francisco has this beat. Apparently, they have over 800 and we have over 600.
Wow.
In just Seattle alone. Washington.
Really? Just in Seattle, there's over 600.
Just in Seattle, there's over 600. That's and insane. There's probably that many wineries on the east side of the state.
I did not realize there was that many. I know, you know, up here, it's really taken off, the microbrews. I love it. There's so much selection and variety and innovation mm-hmm. going on in the microbrew. You go back, I'm going to say you go back 10, 12 years when the microbrew sensation was really starting to kick off here on the West Coast. And pretty much what you'd get is everybody's technique of microbrewing was overhopping. So everything was IPAs that were overhopped. And it was an interesting phenomena for a while, but now people have gotten way more creative. And what we're seeing in the microbrews here in the West Coast, you know, from California all the way up through British Columbia, just so much great variety and communities of microbrewers getting together and sharing recipes and ideas. And yeah, mm-hmm. What a great place.
Yeah. So you're going to find that all along the west side of the mountain, a lot of microbreweries. East side of the mountains, you're going to find wineries. You know,
true.
You can there's throw even a rock and Fremont. Hit a winery. Oh, there you go. Yes.
Yeah. Fremont made a great little geocaching event after a geocaching block party.
They that was fun.
To, yeah, that was fun.
I mean, you know, it's a beer mug as big as my head.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. I guess it's all perspective.
There you go. So things to eat, things to drink, things to do, things to find. You know, come on out to the West Coast.
Absolutely.
Northwest here.
And, you know, if you're coming up here,
yeah,
look up one of us or all of us and let us know you're coming. When I've gone up to Canada, Land Monkey has shown me some fantastic caching and some great experiences, and we would love to do the same if any visitors come to the Northwest, to the Puget Sound area where we're around.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to show you around our little neck of the woods.
Yep. If we're free, we'd be happy to take you about.
Mm-hmm. So if you're coming to the Northwest, get in touch with one of us. And let's say somebody's going to do that, Land Monkey. How would you prefer that they get in touch with you?
Well, the best way to keep in touch with the Land Monkeys is to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope at Land Monkey GC. And of course, on Facebook, we're Team Land Monkey, and YouTube. Check out our videos. There's been, again, a little bit of a lapse as I've been busy dealing with some family stuff and some house stuff, but we'll get back into editing mode soon. And just search YouTube for Land Monkey. There's lots and lots of content just to show you how amazing the Northwest is for geocaching. All right, Witsend, my friend, how about you?
I would say also look at Twitter. Twitter's probably the best place, or Facebook if you're into that. Try to go over to twitter.com/Witsend or facebook.com/Witsend. Whenever I have a post or an update, I try to throw them at one of those two channels first. I hit some other ones periodically, but those two are more frequently updated than the others. Chris of the Northwest.
You know, Twitter. I'm with you guys. Twitter now, especially at 280 characters, you can find Caching NW. Just look for Caching NW. You can go over to facebook.com/CachingNW, Google+. You know what? Head on over to CachingNW.com/host and read our bios and find all the links that we just mentioned and a few more. But, you know, don't forget geocaching.com message center. That'll also get a hold of us.
Oh, yeah.
Tis true.
Folks, I want to say thank you for taking the time to listen to this little bit longer episode of Caching in the Northwest. Don't forget that you can be a part of the show. You can call 253-693-TFTC and leave us a comment, ask a question, or send us 280 characters any time of the day or night. Of course, you can email us at feedback@cachingnw.com. Also, your support helps keep quality shows coming. So if you like this show, please consider clicking the Patreon link on the cachingnw.com website. The show's copyright or licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license, copyright 2017 by Chris Sumpfenauer. And we ask you to stay tuned for
the after show.
I'm going to have to remember to change that 2017 to 2018 soon. Can I make that an event?
Yes.
Good. Yeah.
Oh. Well, folks, our show went a little longer than normal, so we'll keep the after show slightly shorter.
Yeah, we like to talk about the Northwest, I guess.
We really do. There's so much to talk about. And, you know, it's all places that we've been to, so we have that experience, and we want to share it with you. Limax says, I found a new virtual recently. It was at Steve Jobs' garage, where Apple started.
Mm, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Very neat. And shared a Fatas that's, he had 3 caches published within 5 miles of the house within 90 minutes this morning.
Wow.
He mentioned he thought maybe the reviewer had the day off and had a little extra time to go catch up on emails and such.
When I first read that, I thought he meant that he had published,
right.
There were his caches, but Now I'm reading it as though he just saw three of them pop up within 5 miles of his house.
That's how I'm reading it. Yeah, I see what you mean, though, for sure.
Dora Moore says, I came back to Vancouver Island to get two caches that have been taunting me since my hashtag geocache road trip 2 weeks ago.
Nice. And Keats said, just entered day 50 of my current find streak. I have no clue how long it'll last, maybe until the first snowfall. But needless to say, I'm attempting to solve puzzle caches in Vancouver, where I work.
Nice.
Wow, okay, I threw in the snowfall bit. That wasn't Keats.
Congratulations, Keats. Yeah, that's, 50 days is a good streak.
Yeah,
that's
it is. Start,
yeah.
Especially after you've already been caching for a few years, it gets tough to get a streak started.
I think my streak is like 3 days.
There you go.
I'm not built for it.
I also wanted to acknowledge that not too long ago, IHAM and Monkey Cakes were up here, as I had mentioned earlier in the show, and had reached out to us to say, hey, we're going to be in town. Do you want to get together? And unfortunately, it was the weekend we were going to the island to visit my parents. So it
didn't
out, sadly.
That always seems to happen to me, too. But somebody's going to be in town and I'm not there. But, it happens.
Yeah.
So, reach out to us if you're coming in the area. We're not always free, but if we are, we'd love to meet with you.
Best. We would love to see you, yeah.
But it sounds like they had a great trip anyway, so that was good.
Thanks for listening. We're loaded down with food, so I think we're going to end the podcast here.
Yep.
But until next week, get out and get caching in the Northwest.
Good night, everybody.